Let's go to the Red Book. Quick review. 343 something big happens after all the stuff we've done. The anima begins to listen. There at the bottom, second column on 343, he says to her, "And do you agree that I throw you into prison?" I ask. Of course, she answered. So up to this point, the anima was always luring him. And I don't think she's necessarily lost any of her lure, but he's establishing an equal relationship that he can challenge her, not just be led around by the nose. So that's huge. And so there's a new relationship to the anima, and over, I'm just touching the main points, over on 345, the fruit of that is that she says, form your thoughts in matter. That's bracket 6 in the second column. So we kind of discussed what that could mean. I think a couple of things. One, that he's to start putting his work in time and space. Also, I remembered how when he would get stuck, he would work with his hands. So that could be a way of understanding that as well. But the bottom line is then that's the entree to the 7 sermons of the dead. So the 7 sermons are the fruit of this change. And he says, we'll look at the footnote in a moment, that all his future ideas are contained in those 7 sermons, which are hard. Some of, today as I was preparing, I thought, some of this I just don't understand. Maybe we can work on it together. But I think they're very important. Then we took a detour following the direction of the editor in footnote 72. He said, go back to Appendix C. So we went to page 370, and Jane talked about Abraxas. That's the content of Appendix C. Abraxas is that early Gnostic divinity. And if you remember, it's got a fowl's head, a rooster's head, and snake legs. A couple of things Jung mentioned that I think we need to keep in mind. This kind of grotesque figure representing what's grotesque in ourselves or untransformed in ourselves emerges, as he says, when we get out of tradition and history. So that he's putting the presence of Abraxas to the fact that tradition is breaking down and all the parts of the psyche that were once repressed by tradition are now breaking out. That's Abraxas. I think a really big sentence that Jane referred to was Jung saying, this is in the visions, Abraxas doesn't conform to our spiritual hopes, but to our worst fears. So I think you can see in a way that's part of what erupted in those world wars. That part of the psyche that had been held when tradition collapsed, the hold on it collapsed, and it broke out. More from Jung from the Vision Seminar that Jane was quoting. Abraxas would be those parts of the psyche that were not symbolized by Christianity and therefore were not paid attention to and broke out in the, he doesn't say in the war, but that's how I would take it. So that was Appendix C. And then we're referred to Appendix A, which is where we'll pick up, unless you have any questions. And that's on 364.
You said something in the last class about, I thought it was good, about a breakfast. You said Abraxas is a starting point, symbolically looking at our darkness and its potential in us.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Gnostics, Gnostics did look at that.
They did acknowledge it. That's why Jung was going back to the Gnostics, because remember, Gnosticism is simply a word, maybe you know this, it's simply a word for that brand of theology that surfaced after the birth of Christ, which held a different interpretation about what Christ was about than the traditional Christian viewpoint. At that time, there wasn't a traditional Christian viewpoint. There were many different interpretations. The church coalesced around a certain congresses in which it was said, that's not true, this is true. So it was excluded, although at one time it was a competing interpretation. And the big idea that we've talked about is that God gets trapped in matter. And their pantheon of gods was bigger. They would say there's a God above God. And now we're in the domain of Abraxas. And he's much more complicated than Jesus Christ, who's all light.
And it's interesting, because you mentioned the wars breaking out, and that the body leads. Well, all that sexual revolution was beginning to occur in Europe after the Victorian Age. And that was all breaking loose and opening up. And then comes the war.
Yep, absolutely. And remember, that's how he took Christiane Morgan's eroticism as of the same stuff as the breakout of violence. The breakout of sexuality on the one hand, breakout of violence on the other. And I think Abraxas would be connected to that, because, you know, those snake legs could be eroticism. And roosters are aggressive. And he's got a whip.
And is that a helmet? Like he's at war or something? In the other hand?
I don't.
What is that?
No. Jane, do you remember? Do you have your notes handy?
Yeah.
I think he mentioned it.
Yeah, he did. I was reading the section.
Yeah, he said something about that. The whip on
the
right. Yeah. And
the
sword.
Let me see
if I can
catch it here. There is definitely something in that.
I've got it too somewhere. Yeah, Abraxas, this is page 809, it's a shield. Abraxas, page 809, and I think it's in your notes, Jane.
A shield or a whip in one hand, and in the other a sword. If I copied that right, I did.
That
out of...
Mm-hmm.
So in one hand it's a shield or a whip, and then the other a sword. He was also armed.
But I think there are many different portraits of Abraxas.
Okay.
This is just one I found on the internet. I think it would be the whip and the shield.
Okay.
And that this would be shield.
And this must be what he's holding it by.
I was
thinking
it almost looks
like a
Sith.
Like what?
Like you have green,
if
I can't say that word.
Sith? Is it Sith?
Oh, Scythe.
Scythe.
Yep. Anyway, he's a nasty guy.
And if that's, you know, if that's supposed to be everything.
Well, we're going to try to figure that out.
Okay.
It would be completely nasty.
Yeah. Keep that question open because I get confused. He says so many contradictory things, my head starts spinning. But I think it's sometimes he does say that, and then at other times he doesn't say that. But we'll try to figure that out.
Because, I mean, if that's what's God, everything, I mean, there's got to be the other side in there somewhere, right?
Hang on to that question, because he'll talk about Helios and Abraxas. Helios would be the sun.
Would you say the feminine is in this, too?
Well, I'd be tempted to say no, unless we take this as the feminine. And then it would be the feminine in raw form. Remember?
The Gnostics did think there was the feminine side of God, right?
Yeah. But certainly much more pronounced than this. Well, that brings us to, this is a partial answer to your question, Jane, but I think we can see several different versions. Now, I don't know what to say in terms of interpreting this, so I thought, let's just go through it and see what occurs to us. This is page 364. And if you go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines, this is Jung talking about it. Now, this was apparently published separately in a magazine. The reason I'm going into it, one, there are editor directs us to it, and two, it starts talking about Abraxas. Maybe we can make some sense of it. Okay. It, see where I am, portrays, 5 lines down on the first column, it portrays the antinomies of the microcosm within the macrocosmic world and its antinomies. So, putting that in a little more simplistic speech, it's a portrait of the opposites.
That's within.
Antinomy is an opposite. Yeah. Anti-nomies. At the very top, the figure of the young boy in the winged egg, called, I'm not even sure how you pronounce that, Ericopios, but we'll call it Phanes. And thus reminiscent as a spiritual figure of the Orphic gods. Well, let's just stop there for a second. So you see the maybe should we kill the lights maybe so we can, because we got it black and white here. See the winged boy. And that's whatever that is, and that's Phanes. I don't know if you remember the Orphic creation myth. Night was a bird who was fertilized by the wind and laid her egg in the lap of darkness. And from that egg, Eros. Phanes is another word for Eros.
was born. And then he creates the world. So that's at the top of the mandala. Now that would lead me to think, Jane, that there is more than one divinity. See, we got Fani's up here, and then down here, his dark antithesis in the depths is here designated as Abraxas. So that's Abraxas. He is he represents the Dominus Mundi, the Lord of the physical world, and is a world creator of an ambivalent nature. So, I mean, I part of the problem for me in understanding what's going on is just about every sentence contains a contradiction. Because if he's the world creator, he's a world creator, we have two world creators.
Gary, the way that this, as the first couple of sermons of the dead made sense to me, was when I looked at it as the inside of that cone picture, the cone picture is where the two cones come together.
Yeah.
In my mind, I saw the Palermo as that opposite cone, the part of the Godhead that we can never know anything about. And this is, that inner center is the inside of the cone that we can.
Yeah.
Very close to that point that touches and doesn't touch.
Yeah.
And the Palermo is what we can never know. And the first image that comes out of the Palermo is this Abraxas figure. At the very tip, that's the way it, so
that works for me.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
That was what I got out of it. I could make Paul. That was the only way I could make sense of those.
So the two opposites represent the tips of the two cones?
Right. And the other side of that red dot would be the other opposite, but that is completely, that would never be anything that, as a human being, that would be the form of beyond space and time, that you can never have anything. But as soon as it comes onto this side, it's immediately split into the four. What? So as close as we can ever get any symbols of.
What red dot do you have along the center?
In the center.
This one?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the other picture I'm talking about was back here. Farther, that was the cone picture. I think we may have discussed it before you. Do you know what picture I'm talking about?
No.
This picture.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you had talked about another reference, that picture, where he had talked about the point that touches and doesn't touch.
Right. Spirit and matter.
I don't know. That was my vision of what we're talking about.
I think that's accurate, because what he's trying to explain the unexplainable.
Yes.
He's trying to explain what is prior to reason, with reason. That's why it's so complicated.
When you say Palermo, you mean that P-L-E?
Palermo.
Palermo.
Okay. So I don't know any of these words, so I make up my pronunciation.
No, I just wanted to clarify. And that's the thing we can never know, you're saying.
That was the way I'm being taught.
Yeah, I think she's right. The pleroma, now, everything I say is going to be a little bit off, but you could substitute unconscious. I think the pleroma in Gnosticism would be heaven. Not the Christian heaven, but the uncreated foundation of being, which is then differentiated into the world. And it's made of, why Jung likes it so much, it's made up of opposites. That is right there in the Gnostic cosmology.
You know, in answer to Job, he talks about the pleroma as nothing happens here on earth that hasn't happened or been imagined in the pleroma.
Right.
And so I was trying to grapple with okay, so in the pleroma there's opposites.
Right. This is how I would understand it. We may have to reevaluate what I'm saying because I find the text so full of antinomies, as he says. But I would say that the pleroma is the state of opposites when they're unconscious.
That helps.
And creation is lifting those opposites out and synthesizing them so that they are the material we work with to create our selfhood. So in one sense, the opposites are the beginning. In another sense, they're the end. This is why it's so confusing, because he's going to say both. And I think most of the time I can make sense of it by saying, okay, now, is that in their unconscious state or is that in their conscious state? Is that in their resolved condition? Is that in their condition of being worked with? Is that in their condition of being denied? That's what's so confusing. And remember, those of you who did Nietzsche, how the unconscious just comes out. Bleh! So we have to try to sort it out and make it comprehensible by make it so we can comprehend it by reason, knowing that that's not quite right because it's bigger than reason, but reason's all we have to work with.
That helps a lot because then if everything happened in the pleroma that's happened here, it's like, you know, we start out as a child unconscious. And
yeah.
We are a recapitulation of what.
Yeah.
So you're making that distinction.
So you could say a child lives in the pleromatic condition.
And then we split off and become, and we're unconscious, so we're living the opposite.
We're living
until
the opposite.
We can synthesize
right.
again
right.
as an adult,
right.
a conscious adult.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he'll get into the next chapter, or in the book, I forget whether it's one or two, in the sermons, whether a thing has effective existence or not. And the question is, this is how I resolve it. Unconsciousness does have an effective existence, but it's negative. What we want to do is have an effective existence that's conscious and positive.
And I like the way you said that if our working with the opposites and then synthesizing them becomes our material for selfhood.
Yeah.
So in an individual person, you might say that the karma is the unconscious, and then as it becomes conscious, and it synthesizes. But in the collective, the karma would be God. Jung almost talked about the God image, but he said he made no statement about what was behind that.
Yeah.
So that would be the karma, what he's making no statement about.
Well, possibly, but I think he would want to stay with the statement that in the Pleroma, opposites exist side by side, and there's no recognition. I have to give an example from my terrible experience. My host came up to me after these two guys were snarking at my lectures, and he said, I'm making a shirt, don't worry about that. We don't listen to them. They're rigid. I'm embarrassed for them. Just let it roll off your back. Ignore them and keep on going. That's one opposite. During that assassination attempt, he was on their side. See? Two opposites side by side. He never stopped to think, if I said don't listen to them, why am I talking the same way they are? That's the pleroma. Two things happen that are absolutely contradictory and nobody notices. Now, on the affective existence, that had an effect on me. It doesn't have to be conscious to be effective. It's just a negative effect. Now, for him to take these two opposites seriously would mean he would say, I've just contradicted myself. If these guys aren't reliable, and if I'm speaking a message, then my message must be unreliable. Where is the truth? The truth would have been in the center, that there is something wrong with our stated position. That never happened. That synthesis would be the birth of the self. I could give you five other examples like that. How that's the way unconsciousness works. Two contradictory things happen, nobody notices. Life is affected by that, but it's a destructive effect.
You talk about clients who do that.
Yeah.
What is that? Not sociopath.
Well, I think it's the nature of all unconsciousness that's the way it works. I just saw it working in a social setting. That's all. Yeah, the classic I always tell people, literally I was at a party, and a guy was standing there drinking a beer, and I said, can I get you another beer? And he says, I don't drink. See what I mean? I said, what's that in your hand? He got angry and left. That's the way the unconscious works. I'm drinking, but I don't drink. And it's so obvious to somebody from the outside, it's not obvious to somebody on the inside.
But then the positive side of that Abraxas figure, that the Abraxas figure is the person that points it out. You became the devil when you pointed out there was contradiction.
Yeah. Well, should I have a stretch, and then we'll come back to this.
Okay, but just to clarify one thing, you said the effective condition of the unconscious state is negative.
Well, largely.
But you could have positive unconscious...
You could.
...feelings or whatever. I mean, maternal love. It could be very unconscious, but it's positive.
Well, but we're talking here about always a conflict.
Oh, unconscious conflict.
The conflict is what's unconscious.
Okay.
Until it becomes conscious.
Right. Okay. His word, antinomies, or the word he uses later, the opposites.
Okay, let's stretch. This is heavy. We need to air out our brains.